championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys should listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you will find on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we're going to be going over the spring game that literally just happened, talk about what we thought about the atmosphere, who we thought the best players were, and then answering 10 of the questions that we had leading into not just the spring game, but spring ball in general. But Joe, I mean, we kind of had to talk, we talked about it at the beginning of the last show, but we got to talk about thoughts on Tiger.
Oh, that was phenomenal. I woke up, I had an obligation early this morning, and was like, "Oh, I'm gonna miss the first couple." Oh, wait, they're playing in a three man pairing. I'll be able to see everything. And man, he did everything right. Never faltered when those around him were. And man, that picture from him it's from Earl hugging him in '97 to him hugging his son in 2019 is nothing better than that.
I mean, greatest comebacks. This has to be amongst the list. And, you know, when you're thinking of these comebacks, obviously Virginia this year has been a great one, going from losing to a 16 seed to winning the entire national championship. Obviously, as a Cardinals fan, I can't help but think of 2011, going from probably missing the playoffs to winning it all. But of these comebacks,
Rangers.
Of these comebacks, this has got to be of career comebacks amongst the top. And I can't think of another guy who has gone from the top of the top to the bottom of the bottom back to the top like Tiger did.
Right. And especially in a individual sport, not just a team sport where you get these, you know, situations where I'm trying to think of who would fit that bill maybe for a team sport, just kind of that similar scenario going into the depths. Maybe if Josh Hamilton had won a championship with the Rangers or something like that. I really can't think of anything like this, a similar scenario in team sports off the top of my head. So the fact that he did it in an individual sport like that with so much pressure on you and you alone just increases just how impressive what he did was.
I mean, the one guy I could think of maybe from the team sports wise would probably be Michael Jordan. But even then, it wasn't like that. And if I'm going individual sports and maybe even career wise, Lance Armstrong, the guy, mm-hmm. I feel like there's parallels between those two different guys because he was great. He was one of the greats. Then he went through cancer with a 40% chance of survival, got through that, and then went on to win more Tour de France's. Now, obviously, he went through the the entire thing that, you know, the cheating and whatnot. But I feel like Tiger Woods, that's as close as you're going to get to what Tiger Woods has accomplished. That was just amazing. I can't believe Francisco Molinari just completely fell apart like that at the very end. Crazy,
yeah,
crazy
the
stuff.
The most stable golfer in the past week just became unstable very quickly. So
yeah, but let's go ahead and get on to Texas sports, because that's why y'all are here, and talk about the spring game that happened this past weekend on Saturday night game. It was actually, for most spring games, what I've seen, they didn't keep track of attendance, but from what I've seen, that was the best attended spring game I have ever seen, ever, at the
yeah.
University of Texas. Maybe the best one since they won the national championship.
Right. The west side lower half filled in very, very quickly as soon as they opened up the gates. I feel like by about the time there was 15 to 20 minutes left before kickoff, most of those west side lower deck seats, the good ones, had been taken up and people were ready to be there. And then even on the east side, that you know, that kind of mound that people make trying to sit towards the middle in a general admission seating. It's one of those things that doesn't make sense when you hear it, but you know what I'm talking about when you see it.
Oh, yeah.
It was huge. I mean, it was basically all the way up to those east side club seats, that little pocket of orange on the lower bowl. So, I mean, I don't know the numbers, and bragging about spring game attendance is an odd notion to me, but at the same time, it does show, A, a huge dedication, not only by the entire football program, but by the entire athletic department to bring people out and try and make this spring game a very fun event, you know, a free admission, a way to go see kind of football at DKR for free, at least free admission. But it just also shows, I think, that the interest there is in this program now. If y'all remember the first Tom Herman spring game, and then even the first game, there was a lot. I mean, there's obviously going to be empty seats with the first spring game, but there was a lot of empty seats in that first Maryland game, and there was so much excitement about around Tom Herman, but that couldn't overcome the fact that Texas had still only won, what, 16 games in the previous 3 years. Now that there's tangible excitement, tangible evidence of this success, they, you know, showed off the Sugar Bowl trophy at halftime. They showed pictures on the big boards of what the rings would look like. That's why you saw a lot more people show up. And even with the weather concerns that moved some other spring games and other locations to different times and indoors to practice facilities instead of front of fans, that this still went on, and at least for the first half, until the elements kind of took a toll on everybody's fortitude. There were a lot of people.
Some people
there
didn't see the forecast that it was going to get down to the 40s.
Right.
Going there in shorts and shirts.
Right. You know, even if they did, I don't know if anybody expected the wind to not only affect how their comfort, but also some stuff on the field that didn't lead this to being the cleanest played of spring games or practices.
No. But before we get into that, I want to say, I mean, hats off to Chris Del Conte for what he has done so far, but I'm not going to give him the trophy just yet. As you said, there's the excitement going into this right now, into this program. There's excitement surrounding it. There's tangible evidence. But if they can do, they've done it 1 year. 1 year where it's been like this for the spring game. 1 year where it's been like this for football games. I want to see this consistently happen over and over and over again, getting better and better and better each time. If you can do that, then yes, hand Chris Del Conte whatever money he wants, write a blank check and give it to him.
Right.
But right now, I mean, awesome start. Great start for Texas. Great start for the program. The excitement is a great stepping stone into the next year. But yes, the wind took its toll on the game. It took its toll on the fan base. It was, let's just go ahead and say, it was not a pretty game. Or
no,
quote
not,
unquote
not in the
game.
Slightest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read some complaints, you know, what's going to happen when you go to Ames or Lubbock and there's 25 mile an hour winds? Well, they're probably going to change the game plan to where you're not passing, you know, 54 times combined between the two squads. You're probably not going to see an emphasis on passing in a game where there's 20 to 25 mile an hour winds. They were trying to give looks for stuff like that in a spring game, just because it's a scrimmage, because it's a practice, they're trying to give looks. So if you're basing any judgments on the Texas passing game in 2019 based off a scrimmage where there were large flags at full extension in the wind, then you're taking the wrong takeaways from this game. I think what you need to look at, instead of, you know, maybe inaccurate passing or stuff like that, is instead, if you're going to complain about the passing game, look at a lack of protection that was offered to some of those guys and the drops. Those were my biggest complaints compared to inaccurate passing, because I gave the elements a little bit of a, you know, I gave them credit there, I guess, to put it into football coaching terms. But stuff like drops and stuff like missed blocking, that's definitely something that's not affected as much by the elements as inaccuracy on some downfield throws.
Right. Some throws that looked like they hit a wall at some point, or some kicks. I mean, Cameron Dicker hit, what was it, a 50-yard kick that looked like it just about hit a wall towards the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the elements definitely played an effect. But going through those elements, there were guys who actually had pretty good games. Let's go ahead and name three each of who we thought were the best players on the field. You want to start off?
Yeah, do we want to do both sides or one side?
We'll go, you know, either side, just one.
Okay. This is the guy everybody came to see, all basically, or one of the two guys everybody came to see. Have to be impressed with what Jordan Whittington did in this scrimmage situation. One of the biggest things I wanted to look for was, how comfortable did he look playing running back? And not only did he look comfortable, he looked natural. And he's always looked like a natural football player, but for him to do it at a position that he's still kind of learning the ins and outs of at a D1 level this early was very encouraging. 5 yards a carry on the ground behind the first team line, even added 30 yards receiving, and almost brought in a touchdown if it weren't for a great play by Joseph Osai. So that's really my biggest standout. I think people wanted to see him do well and acclimate himself well this early in his career. And what they saw on Saturday was signs that he's been doing just that.
I agree. Yeah, Jordan Whittington looked great. There were a few times where he dropped the ball. There were a few times where he ran into the back of a guy. But it's amazing how quickly he has taken to that position, to that running back position. It's completely different than the wide receiver position. Two completely different things. So for him to pick up that position so quickly, it just speaks to not only his natural athleticism, but his ability to just play football.
Right, exactly.
The guy I have is another offensive player, Devin Duvernay. And I know he wasn't out there very much, but he showed us some things that we had asked for, like his ability to block as a wide receiver, his ability to grab the ball and make big plays with it. I think Devin Duvernay might be the next guy who takes a step onto the national stage next year. That would be my pick. You already have Colin Johnson on the stage. You already have Sam Ellinger on the stage. Devin Duvernay is that next guy.
I definitely agree. And the thing is that if he is going to be the guy that takes that step, he's given himself a phenomenal base to do so from. I mean, he's probably the best wide receiver blocker at Texas right now. And Z asks wide receivers, the position asks for a lot of blocking. If he can add the downfield threat that he and Sam Ellinger just missed a couple times last year, then he will, like you mentioned, become a more complete receiver and a guy that when the media does scouting reports and players to watch and keep an eye out for so-and-so, they're going to start mentioning Devin Duvernay, maybe not as often as they do with guys like Sam Ellinger and Colin Johnson. But there's, you know, number six is not going to start taking people by surprise if he continues to build and do stuff, play to the expectations that you and probably the coaches have as well.
Right. Who's your next guy?
I guess my next guy, and this is adding a little bit of a qualifier, is Casey Thompson on the ground. Through the air, he didn't really offer anything to make me think that he has any threat of making a quarterback competition interesting come the fall, and I don't think any fans were expecting that. But like I mentioned in the show that we recorded before the spring game, I wanted to see how he looked in the pocket. Didn't really get a chance to see that because that first team defense really had their way with that second team offensive line. Even fielding snaps from Rafidi Girmay was a little bit of a chore for him. But
oh, yeah.
Once he got on the ground and got moving, even you know when he couldn't be touched except for DeMarvian Overshown breaking a little bit of a rule, he looked electric. That he showed off a lot of stuff that he showed off in his film. It's why he was one of the most celebrated and heralded players from the state of Oklahoma in a long time. And showed a lot of why Texas fans should be excited that Thompson stuck around and remained with the program. I would have wanted to see better than 9 for 23 passing, but I have to be a little bit encouraged by when he took a couple reps with the first team. He went 5 of 8, even though the yards per attempt wasn't anything phenomenal. But I think player number two of the game was Casey Thompson's performance on the ground, because just haven't really been able to see him do anything like that in any sort of action at DKR, whether scrimmage or game. And to see that still translates to the college level was very encouraging.
Yeah, and not just is he fast, but he's sudden with every movement he makes. So it really gets a lot of these guys. I mean, he wasn't getting touched for 10 to 15 yards, and it makes these guys a little late to tackling or getting to the spot. He's just so fast. He's sudden. He understands spacing when it comes to running. Impressive on the ground, and even in some of the passing he was good, but we'll get to that later on in the show when we answer some of these questions. My second guy, and it was tough, I only chose one linebacker, and I made myself choose one linebacker. It was Joseph Osai for me. It was so close to being Jeffrey McCulloch for me, but Joseph Osai, he was great in the pass rush against Samuel Cosmi. He was great in the pass coverage against Jordan Whittington when he went toe for toe with Jordan Whittington, and Whittington just, you get two hands on it, man, you got to catch it, but just missed it. It was great effort from him. I am very impressed, and if Devin Duvernay isn't the guy who gets the national press next year, it will be Joseph Osai.
Yeah, I agree, and not only that, it looked like they were putting him in some more positions to really have those one-on-one battles that a pass rusher like him is able to do, and when he looks good at doing that, that's expected. But when he's able to make some off the line of scrimmage plays like he was able to, that's just a bonus that can definitely increase the ceiling of this defense going into next season.
I mean, he's the only guy who I've seen who's a linebacker/pseudo defensive end who can make defensive tackle type pass rushing moves. I haven't seen that from many other guys I've scouted, many other guys we've watched tape on, many guys who've come through Texas or played against Texas. I haven't seen that. He is 245 and making moves like he's 280. So that was impressive. Who's your third guy, Joe?
I guess my third guy, if I'm going to stray away from offense, I'll have to go with Jalen Green.
Oh, you stole mine. Okay.
Yep. I couldn't go all three on the side of the ball that only put up, 13 points yesterday or on Saturday. So yeah. I had to give credit to the guys who made sure there weren't a bunch of points scored. And Jalen Green was part of it. He often covered one of the receivers that Tom Herman has referenced as having a phenomenal spring in Malcolm Epps. He still had 38 yards on 5 catches, but 25 of them came from one play. So basically he was having 3 yards a catch before then. And a lot of that was a result of what Jalen Green was able to do. Part of that 2018 defensive back class, one that probably saw the least amount of action compared to everybody last year, even with DeSean Jameson playing on offense. And of course, I'm forgetting a little bit about DeMarvian Overshown not seeing a ton of time except for special teams, like with Jalen Green. But for him, to put in a performance like this, go into the spring with a lot of positives against another player who had a phenomenal spring, especially as he's competing for a starting job, definitely something I was encouraged about. And with this being a pass-first league, to have some clarity at what I believe is the biggest question mark on defense heading into next season at cornerback was huge good news for Texas, especially if that's a sign of him kind of maybe not a crescendo, but him rising throughout the spring and on track to continue to get better until fall camp starts.
Yeah, you just hope it isn't the Dylan Osakowski school of showing out in the spring game or the early game and then
right.
messing up at the end. But I think my third guy is a guy who many people aren't really going to notice. It's Zach Shackelford. Zach Shackelford was a huge deal up the middle. Now, the running backs really couldn't take advantage of that, and that's partially due to some great linebacking play and great defensive line play, but Zach Shackelford was steady, hit every snap, which was, you can see on the other side, was a huge thing. Stonewalled guys who were trying to come on blitzes, stonewalled the nose guards, nose tackles. I was very impressed with what we saw Zach Shackelford. It was a far cry from what we've seen in the past years when he has been constantly brought up by fans as being a problem on that offensive line. Fourth year, it seems like it's finally getting to him. And that left side of the line, I am pretty confident in next year because one of the only times that they really messed up on the left side of the line, it was Junior Angula out there, not the future probably starter in Parker Braun.
Right. And to have that calming presence at center is so important, especially, on a line that's asking three new guys to come in and claim starter spots, to have that one guy in the middle who knows where pretty much everybody's supposed to go. You kind of saw old Shackelford in Girmay during his snaps. I mean, you saw struggling with snaps. You saw struggling with some of the core competencies of playing center. And that kind of tells you just how much of a step that Shackelford has taken, not only in his couple of years, but under this staff. So he's definitely becoming one of those guys that you cannot afford to lose on offense at this point. But I think, I guess one little bonus I'll throw in there from an under the radar guy, maybe not. And you should, I feel like you should throw one in there too. Maybe somebody who doesn't normally run with the first or second string or anything like that. Got to give a little bit of credit to Peter Pudgy. I think that interception that Kobe Boyce had, a lot of it had to do with what should have been a sack by Peter Pudgy on Thompson. And he made another good play, later on in the game, showed some solid pass rush moves. Definitely a guy on the Omenihu track of development. And right. then, while Omenihu was not granted the luxury of redshirting, that should be something Pudgy's able to do. But for him to just have, a couple plays like that to show that yet another freshman in his first semester on campus is starting to get things a little bit. I was very happy to see 45 out there making sure nobody forgot about him as far as, with some of the other early enrollees.
Right. And I could go obvious and say BJ Foster, but if I'm going to go under the radar here, I'll go Chris Brown. Chris Brown has been a guy who has had his name called a lot in spring practices, but still very under the radar because he's a redshirt junior who has not had a lot of praise heaped upon him. And he got a sack in that game. He had a really nice plays. He was showing off a lot of ability that was impressive and hasn't been seen before. You can see how versatile he can be, where you can put him on the field if need be.
Yeah, exactly. So there's still definitely some other names who had better statistical games than both those guys, but you know, just to see them continue to either, you know, continue to show why they've been praised so much, or to maybe do something worth mentioning that, you know, they haven't been able to do that before during the spring. It's a small positive to take from that game.
But let's go ahead and talk about some of the questions we had going into this game, because we had a lot of questions, not just in going into this game, but into the spring ball in general. And the first one, I think the biggest question actually, was depth issues at the linebacking position. After losing Anthony Wheeler, after losing Gary Johnson, and not having anybody behind them except for Adeoye, who hadn't played a single snap, there were some big questions, especially with moving a guy, Jeffrey McCulloch, into a position that he had not played before at Rover at the University of Texas. So, Joe, what were your thoughts on that linebacking position?
I thought they played at a level, I think you can be encouraged by it, but I don't think you would call it anything above average.
Yeah.
And that's fine. There was definitely some guys who rotated in there. I mean, Marcus Tillman is probably not going to see a ton of time this year in between the tackles, but he was still the leading tackler. And they were all solos. Adeoye had, you know, four tackles, and two of them were behind the line of scrimmage, even got credited with a pass breakup. And if that's the play that I think it is, I don't know how much of a hand he had in that, but you didn't see him just completely lost out there. You saw good play from, like you mentioned, Jeffrey McCulloch, and even saw guys like Luke Brockermeyer make some great plays space. And even Caleb Johnson. Look, you know, he didn't look like he was overmatched out there, but you know, since I'm mentioning a junior college transfer, a redshirt freshman walk-on, those are all the names I just mentioned, except for McCulloch, there's still a lot of concern there, but I didn't see anything, you know, maybe it's because of the limited game plan that they had because of the elements, but I didn't see anything at linebacker, at least from yesterday, that made me extremely concerned. Now, I know that throughout the course of the spring, both you and I have heard that there's definitely, you know, on this defense, there are questions at linebacker. And you know, while my concern remains at corner, a lot of other people's main concerns are, you know, at linebacker. And not to say that one spring game with 13 total points on the field should undo any of those concerns. But even Tom Herman said this is a unit that had been taking it on the chin a lot over the course of the spring and needed this good performance to go in. And with this defense, we know that a lot of it starts with the linebackers, and the overall result showed that the linebackers held their own.
Yeah, I think they show that they can play at a higher level than what we've been hearing about. However, I still think that there's a question of the depth. Yes, you have Jeffrey McCulloch, and boy, he looked really good. He looked like he transitioned to that position very, very well. Adeoye Adeoye, he didn't miss as many tackles as I was expecting, and I don't think he missed one. He might have missed. No, he missed one,
right.
But he was chasing a guy down.
He was in position, missed a couple plays, but in position, which redshirt freshman in spring football, like Tom Herman says, we can coach that. But
right. But it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. And still, on top of that, you have a lot of questions behind those guys. And even with those guys, I expect Texas to go after a grad transfer linebacker over the next few months and try to get some seniority, get some depth, get some understanding of different playbooks and the style of play at the next level into their linebacking room.
Yeah, this is kind of the time you're going to see that when things start coming out after spring practice. But yeah, like you mentioned, depth remains a big question, because just looking at that stat sheet, you're encouraged by Luke Brockermeyer, you know, to do so well as a redshirt freshman and as a walk-on. It's a great story to see.
He can move, man.
Right. And it's a great story to see someone like Court Jock, number 57, a guy who had been on special teams all last year, not only to get some praise from Herman throughout the course of the spring, but to play well. But those are still walk-ons that you're, at least at this point, playing a considerable amount kind of in that 2 and 3 in the depth chart area. which, you know, if those guys become two or three in the depth chart good, then that's a bonus and a credit to your walk-on program. But if they're there by necessity, that's not the thing you want. And if a grad transfer does pop up, then you would probably take that grad transfer over someone, you know, like a redshirt freshman or, you know, redshirt sophomore walk-on, if at all possible.
Right. So the next question we have is the cornerback question. That's the big question for you. Joe, did Jalen Green's play and even Deshaun Jameson's play quell any of the fears you had about this position?
A little bit. I mean, like Tom Herman said after the game, I hope nobody really, or something similar to this, hope nobody takes a ton away from our passing game, not only just because of the spring game, because of the elements, but you saw those guys definitely competing. It was unfortunate to not see Anthony Cook out there, because I wonder what this defense looks like when those guys are playing at the top of their game and really making play after play. Kobe Boyce looked good, had an interception and a pass breakup, but there were a couple times when, you know, his lack of weight, I guess, was a little bit evident, especially going against, you know, some of the more physical and even bigger receivers that the white team had to offer at some point. So, but overall, seeing Jalen Green do well was definitely encouraging for him, but because that was kind of the only standout performance, at least in the context of the spring game, something to think about. But since we knew and have heard that corner so far is encouraging through the spring, not dominant or a surefire thing like you probably could have expected from Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis, but something that, you know, there's definitely something there to build on. It's a good way to go into fall camp, and that's your question, is that what do we build on instead of what do we find?
Yeah, I completely agree with what I heard about the staff, which is they are cautiously optimistic. After that game, I am cautiously optimistic about the cornerback position, including the nickelback position, which B.J. Foster just absolutely destroyed. He was great. I am very impressed with how he took to that position. And not really, actually, because it was almost expected. He was so good against the run. He's great in pass coverage. What he was able to do out there was impressive.
If that's the place that, you know, suits him best, and for him, if he somehow excels this year doing that, then not only is it a great credit to what he's able to do on the football field and how versatile he is, but how Texas was able to prepare him and in doing so put some other guys on the field too that complement his ability.
Yeah, I think the biggest part about that is getting him on the field and getting other guys on the field as well. But let's go ahead and get on to the next question though and talk about the running backs, because that was another question, was the depth of the running back position and their use, how they were used. Joe, what was your main takeaway from that running back position?
Well, going into this spring, I was concerned in the fact that it's true sophomore, true freshman, a experienced junior who hasn't been particularly spectacular, and a guy who has struggled to see the field. And I think Texas got lucky last year in that they really had to rely on 2.5, 3 running backs, where that's not a luxury a lot have. And, you know, a lot of them end up relying on 3, 4, sometimes even 5. So 4 was kind of that minimum number I was fine with going into the spring, and even being fine with it was kind of a new step to me. But to see them all play and be reputable in this game was encouraging, especially with how, you know, some of the first team defense was really able to throw a wrench into whatever that second team offense was doing. But like I mentioned, Jordan Whittington looked like a natural back there. Keonta Ingram barely got any time, and I think that's because, you know, A, he's your first string running back at this point. Not only just because of, you know, process of elimination, but he is that good. So in order to see Jordan Whittington, you know, put up 5.2 yards a carry, and that's extremely encouraging. To see Kirk Johnson move suddenly, that's encouraging. You have to hope that whatever afflicted, it looked like his, I thought it was wrist originally, but it could have been a shoulder or arm thing. It doesn't seem, at least at 5 on Sunday, that anything is, information about that hasn't quite come out yet, but it just kind of showed, you know, the question with Kirk is going to remain that question with Kirk. If he can stay healthy, he could be spectacular, but he's got to stay healthy first. Overall, considering all the focus that was probably going to go on the run game, not only because of Jordan, but also because of the elements, I thought they did well. That first team offensive line has a lot of positive attributes to it, including up the middle. So we'll see what really happens with running back, how that position kind of shakes itself out, who, you know, I think number one is pretty clear at this point, but there could be some movement between 2, 3, and 4. I think that's going to be something during fall camp to definitely monitor, because whoever 2 is going to get a lot of carries.
Yeah. I mean, man, why does God hate Kirk Johnson? Just.
Yeah.
Jeez, that guy's luck is atrocious. But yeah, Jordan Whittington was impressive out there, to be honest. And we talked about it, his ability to adjust to that position. But I was interested in the use of the running backs, and specifically, will they be using them? How much will they be using them in the zone, inside zone run? And they did. They did use them quite a bit, and they excelled there. And the offensive line did a good job of getting a push. And the defensive line did a good job of actually stopping it at times. But what was interesting to me was how their use in the pass game affected the defense. And there's a specific play that literally it came on. So I'm on one screen, I have our show, and the other screen, I have a replay of the game going on. And as soon as we started the show, there was the play of Devin Duvernay coming across the middle and getting a reception for, I believe it was a first down. It was one of the bigger plays that the offense had. And what started that was the defense's reaction to the running backs out of the backfield. When they motioned out Jordan Whittington out to the outside, it pulled the linebackers away from the middle of the field, which was then attacked by Devin Duvernay. Having the ability to have that on your team, open up the pass game just like that, is going to be tremendous next year for this offense and their ability to be explosive. I believe that if there were less dropped balls out of the backfield, then there probably would have been some more explosive use of the swing passes and the bubble screens and all of that from the running back position.
Yeah, I definitely want to see, when it comes to Devin Duvernay, some versatility from him. See him, and he showed that a lot last year, but if he's going to live up to some of the stuff we talked about earlier, he's got to show not only that he can do a little bit more than the stops and goes, but he can run over the middle a little bit and show some wiggle, and kind of seemed like he showed signs of that last night. So, like I mentioned, if he's just a little bit better than last year, that gives Texas probably an elite receiver core.
Oh, yeah.
Again.
For sure. For sure. I mean, just the ability to have him and then having elite receivers out of your backfield just all over the field, that's a weapon that not many teams in the country can boast. And honestly, I think Texas might have their best pass-catching running back since Chris Obanaya back in 2008, who I believe had something like 50 catches out of the backfield or something like that. And not many running backs can do that. And not many running backs have, honestly. Again, I was impressed with their use out of the backfield. I was okay with how they were used down the middle. So let's go ahead and talk about one question we had, which was, how vanilla would this be, actually, this scrimmage? Because how much would they want to show? They didn't show everything, but they showed some stuff that was interesting. Specifically, their use of the running backs was interesting, as I just mentioned. But there are some plays out there where I was like, wow, that is a new formation, where they did like a 10 personnel formation out and motioned the wide receiver out to the very outside, which caused an interesting defensive reaction where they pulled Overshown down to a cornerback position. And I was like, this is something I have never seen before at the Longhorns.
Yeah, Tom Herman, at least in his history, is shown to like unbalanced looks where, you know, three receivers are on one side and one's on the other, or three receivers on one side, two on the other. You saw, you know, a little bit of this last year, and you saw some of it this pass game where they run some 4-wide, 2-by-2 sets, even from 11 personnel, where they put Cade Brewer out into the slot, and they did that with Andrew Beck last year. A couple things that they did was they ran some two-back stuff, which is in Tom Herman's playbook, but not something we've seen a lot of at Texas, just because I don't think the talent has been there to necessitate two backs on the field at the same time. And not only did they do it from 21, they did it from 20, and then even had Jordan Whittington go out and play a wide receiver position he was comfortable with, at least out of the backfield. So they didn't show a lot. I kind of feel like the 11 personnel 2-by-2 stuff isn't anything groundbreaking, and they will probably add some more stuff to it from this year. But to see them put two backs on the field at one time, I think not only was it a taste for the fans to see that that's something that they have in their repertoire, but you know, even a little bit for maybe for the other coaches, like, hey, you know, that guy we just recruited, we can put him on the field at the same time as this other pretty athletic guy. And
nice little message.
That formation that Oklahoma's been using for years, that Oklahoma State has been using for years, you know, that two-back set that just puts a lot of different pressures on different parts of the defense out of the backfield. Yeah, that's in Texas's playbook now, and it's going to probably yield some impressive results.
Stuff like that matters in terms of showing these different looks and making the opposing team waste reps in scrimmages and waste reps in practice. So, you know, it wasn't super vanilla. There wasn't a trick play like I was expecting there to be, probably because they couldn't throw it way down deep.
If quarterbacks can't make throws, then what wide receiver is?
Right, exactly. But I was impressed with some of the formations they threw out there, which was like, oh, this is interesting that they're doing this year because of the personnel they're able to have finally on their team. It was interesting to watch some of the evolutions of this offense and some of the defense. I mean, and honestly, the defense wasn't just send three or four guys. There were times where they were running different stunts, different types of blitzes, you know, different zone blitzes, different zone schemes. I was impressed with the ability of the defense to execute on some of these different types of pass rushes.
Right. This offense, at least on Saturday, was kind of a pretty bare bones. And as we know, Todd Orlando really eats simple. There's no simple offense, but conventional and offenses where they hit a lot of their expectations or have a lot of expected plays to run. Basically, guys that are easy to scout. I don't know quite the right word, but simple, I guess, Georgia-like offenses where it's kind of basic 11 personnel shotgun stuff. Right. That's the stuff that Todd Orlando eats alive, and because that's kind of what Texas's offense was stuck in on Saturday, that's why you saw the defense have a considerable amount of success.
Yeah. So let's go to the next thing. One of my questions was, how would the team leaders do during this game? Because I said if they had some sort of consistency, then I could see Texas being a 9-win floor team. So let's start off with Sam Ehlinger. Joe, how did Sam Ehlinger do?
He did not have a good scrimmage.
No, he did not.
He, I don't think anybody can really question the effort that Sam Ehlinger brings to inside a Texas uniform on a consistent basis, but the performance wasn't there in this scrimmage. It just wasn't. He was the interception by Jeffrey McCulloch was a play where not just one but two defenders had him perfectly read because he telegraphed the pass. And that's, you know, just not a mistake that you can make.
And he still threw it.
Yeah.
He was not there and he still threw it.
Right. There were definitely some minus plays. That one comes to mind. The firm fastball that kind of should have been caught, but maybe not should have been thrown that hard to Brewer on the leak out screen. That was a beautiful play, by the way. And not something I recall seeing. You see those kind of delay wheel type things, but you rarely see it from the tight end, at least, and him being the guy leaking out, that play didn't work out. So I think the play from Sam Ehlinger, at least in the spring game, left a lot to be desired. At the same time, we've seen what good Sam looks like and know that when he really has to turn it on, he normally does. So yes, in the context of the spring game, you can go ahead and say that was a little bit of a dud, but I think everybody kind of also understands what the overall context of the spring game is.
Right. I'm not saying that Sam Ehlinger is a bad quarterback or is going to have a bad year because of the spring game. It just wasn't great. And I think it partly goes to the offensive coaches starting to release or loosen the reins on Sam Ehlinger and allow him to try to make and fit balls into different windows. He might have been unable to do that because of the wind. And let me emphasize, the wind was blowing people's hot dogs around the stadium. It was absolutely insane.
Yeah, it blew the ball off of when it was put down to be snapped. If Zach Shackelford did put his hand on it pretty immediately, there'd be some times when it rolled a couple feet.
Right. So it was a little bit of that, but I think him trying to be the gunslinger, the type of what I said was the goal for Sam Ehlinger out of the spring, which was to become more of a gunslinger, try to fit the ball in, try to make a play. He tried to do that in a certain positions, and there were certain times where, hey, you just can't throw the ball there when he's double covered, or you can't try to fit the ball in when he is literally, you can't see him behind the defender. I think it's a little bit of that on top of the fact of some of his guys weren't catching balls. Some of the times the defensive line was getting through, and a lot of the time there's a lot of wind. So the next guy that we were hoping to see was Keonta Ingram. We didn't see too much of him, so we'll go on to the next guy and replace him with Jordan Whittington. But we've already talked about him. So let's go ahead and go to the defensive side of the ball with Roach. Let's talk about Samuel Cosmi, because Samuel Cosmi, he had a decent game, but he was actually having some trouble at times with Joseph Osai. And I don't know if that speaks more to Joseph Osai or Samuel Cosmi one-on-one. Samuel Cosmi held his own most of the time, but there are times where, yeah, the defensive line got to Sam Ehlinger from that left side, which is not what you want to see.
Right, exactly. And I think as far as strictly pass rushing, I don't think it gets better on Texas right now than Joseph Osai. So, like we say all the time, the whole zero-sum game that is spring football practices, it was zero-sum because there was not so much that, one guy had so much success and one guy had so little success, and that's what brought it together. But it was, like you mentioned, Osai got a couple plays, and then Cosmi would get a few plays, just show that why both are respected for their play doing what they do. So, definitely you want to see better from Joseph or from Samuel Cosmi, but you understand a little bit who he's going up against. And that's a guy that, there's the coaches, and from everything we understand, have shown zero reason to waver from him being the cornerstone left tackle of this offensive line.
Right. Let's go to the defensive line, though, and take a look at Malcolm Roach, who is supposed to be the guy who's the disruptor on this team. I feel like that was instead given to Joseph Osai, and Malcolm Roach was a pretty solid run-stopping force for this defensive line.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I kind of tend during these types of things to view offense a little bit, and I guess when I see the offense's failures, that helps me identify the defense's failures and that first-team offensive line.
You mean their successes?
Yes, exactly. So seeing that first-team defensive line, whether it was, no matter who was out there, Coburn, Wilbon, Graham, and then Roach, just be able to do a lot of whatever it really wanted against the line was encouraging. And a lot of that's led by Roach. He's the emotional leader of that unit. He could be the emotional leader of the defense, one of the top leaders of that defense. And for him to go out and, maybe not make me notice him, and that's tough for defensive linemen to do, but to make the right plays and be around the ball constantly, just looking at his stats. Oh, he only tallied one tackle, and it wasn't even a solo tackle. So, maybe he didn't produce, but at the same time, because of a guy who's drawn so much praise this spring, is someone that they brought out after the game, didn't get a chance to talk with him, but they brought him to the game. This is a guy that they have a lot of faith in, not only from what he's done in previous years, but what he did in the practices prior to Saturday's spring game.
Yeah, and he showed you something that he showed you, 2 years ago when he was on the defensive line? His ability to get down the line as a defensive lineman, his ability to go sideways, side to side, that was one thing I saw a lot of times. Yeah, exactly. That's what he's best at. He is able to stop a lot, or at least get into the fray and cause a lot of garbage in front of some of these running backs by reading the play, getting down the line and causing a big, big clump and making the running backs make another move right into a waiting linebacker or another defensive lineman. So I was impressed with what Roach did, but not incredibly impressed. So the next guy, though, who was another leader of this team is Jeffrey McCulloch. And I think we talked about it. I was impressed with what he did. It wasn't crazy. Some of the pass coverage could have been cleaned up, but there were times where you saw him go toe-to-toe with a tight end or running back and cover them. He knocked the ball away from a streaking Keonta Ingram down the field. So I was impressed with what he was able to do on the field for a position he hasn't played.
Yeah, completely agree. Rover is still something that's a little bit of a learning thing for him, and to have the evidence, like we were mentioning, that great read on Ehlinger's pass play for that interception and almost return for a score, and just to be solid the rest of the game, that's really encouraging as far as the one of the middle linebacker positions, and kind of lets you know he's probably going to be the number one linebacker for this team this season. And if that's the case, if he's your baseline, if having a senior is your baseline who shows the ability to know where to be, that makes figuring out what the other spot is going to be, at least the other middle linebacker spot, a bit of an easier task.
Right. And then the last guy is BJ Foster. We kind of talked about him, but again, I want to emphasize, I was impressed of his ability to stay in position, guard guys who, whoever he was put up against, and excel and get through, fight through blocks and play the nickelback position better than I think we've seen played by anybody so far. Especially, you know, PJ Locke did a good job in the run game, but he didn't, couldn't do the coverage. That's what BJ Foster brings.
Right. He brings that physical nature to the game. And we got to see that when on a wide receiver screen designed for Malcolm Epps with Josh Moore blocking, BJ Foster made pretty quick work of Josh Moore, which, you know, you probably won't see a 170 pound guy trying to block a 205 pound guy during the season, at least not a ton by design, when there's a 240 pound guy who's not as good in space available to block. Another discussion for another day, but for him to not only show his ability to be physical and then to just kind of do what everybody understands he's able to do from the nickel position, that was a plus. I feel like, though, we can't not mention DeMarvian Overshown coming and not only hitting, I know I mentioned it earlier, but I feel like we kind of need to highlight, even though it's the end of the show, that guy, you know, his high school film at ARP, all he showed was his ability to hit. He showed his ability to hit a couple times on kickoffs. And Casey Thompson, even though the thing is, it looked kind of bad, but it was just a clean shove. You know, one guy going at an angle, running into another guy running.
He took it easy on Casey Thompson.
He did, and he still gave him a good lick.
That was nothing that DeMarvian Overshown could have delivered. That was...
It could have been bad.
Yeah, exactly. It could have been bad. So the next part, the next question we have is disparity between the units. Joe, there wasn't much between the wide receivers and the quarterbacks like we were expecting. There wasn't much like between the running backs and the linebackers like we were expecting. Where the disparity came, for at least in my eyes, was the defensive line and the offensive line.
Right.
Especially the second team. And that kind of talks to another question we had, which was, how is the second team offensive line going to play? Because there is probably going to be some injuries on this offensive line. That's just what happens. And you're going to need guys to come in and fill those roles. So what was the problem with the second team offensive line?
It definitely started a lot at center. That throws everything off, and I think you can understand that with Rafidi Girmay learning the position, they are going to put somebody else in between him and Zach Shackelford before it comes to him seeing the field at center if he continues to look like that. And that
right.
most likely goes to Derek Kerstetter, could go to somebody else, but I feel like that's the safe bet to be your guy. Christian Jones, I think you mentioned him a little bit earlier. He looked good.
He flashed, but he had some problems here and there.
I think it shows that the second team offensive line, you know, if Sam Cosmi goes down, Reese Moore is not going in there. And I think that's kind of something everybody understands. That's something this staff has shown their propensity to do, is if number six is a guard, they will find a way to make sure he stays at guard and, you know, maybe number three tackle goes in or something like that. They don't just go, all right, number two tackle, number one got hurt, you're in. And that's a good thing, especially with the way that the second offensive line played. I was obviously fixated on the tackles. That's something I mentioned in my preview. And you can see that Reese Moore is still learning the position. And I think he showed a lot of very good movement ability, at least at that tackle spot. And I think, if I remember Tom Herman saying, right, he was very, very highly complimentary of Reese Moore's ability to get into, the, I think, like the 290 range. But it's still a position he's learning. He was just a big pass catcher who wore number 80-something back when he was in high school and was able, you know, being the 6'6", 275-pound guy, that goes a long way in middle-of-nowhere West Texas. And he definitely has made some strides in that regard. But even though he looked that way, or even though he was penciled into that spot on Saturday, I don't think he showed anything that would make me believe he should be the second-team left tackle going into this season.
Yeah, and I think just in general, these offensive linemen, they need to get this game to slow down for them so that they can yes. play to their full ability. They can play to their full speed, because as soon as that starts to slow down, then you can speed up, because the game is so fast for guys like Junior Angulau, Reese Moore, and Christian Jones, it doesn't allow them to play to their full potential. You saw that with Junior Anguilao, one of the sacks that Chris Brown actually got. Junior Anguilao just was not ready for the speed that he was coming out. He played it perfectly, but it would have been great in high school. He would have been fast enough in high school, but at this next level, he just wasn't fast enough. He has to understand. He has to know when this is going on, how fast it's coming. And then once he gets accustomed to it, then he'll start to excel. So again, that's why you saw flashes from some of these guys. But in general, in the overall, it wasn't pretty against the second team defensive line, because the second team defensive line, you have guys like Jamari Chisholm. You have guys like DeAndre Christmas Giles, who is a veteran. You had guys out there like Byron Bonds, who is, you know, it's easier to play that position than the offensive line. So in that context, it's just they need to get accustomed to the spot. And I think that's possible over the season, as long as you don't throw them directly into the fire.
You know, there's still a lot of time before the season starts, but yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. You need these guys to get some more work in before you have to start trusting them.
Right. I guess we already talked about offensive line, but we'll talk about the explosive plays. We were expecting more explosive plays from the Longhorns, at least in this game. They didn't materialize. And I think we talked about some of the big reasons that it happened, but, you know, including the drops, the wind. But I think one of the biggest reasons was the defense was tackling. They tackled. They forced guys like Jordan Whittington into corners and then forced them out of bounds. Or they hit guys and then rallied to the ball. They made sure that they could corral these types of big plays and make sure they couldn't happen. The last thing that we need to talk about, and this is something that's going to be big coming the season, is the backup quarterback play. And we talked a little bit about it at the very beginning of the show with our impression of Casey Thompson's ability to run. But I was pretty impressed with his throwing ability too. I think I'm one of the only people out here that was like, wow, these are different wide receivers. If there wasn't as much wind, if that was Colin Johnson, then that's a touchdown or that's a big play coming from Casey Thompson. And I've seen him make these types of plays, throws off the back of his foot, getting somebody in his face and put it perfectly in the corner of the end zone, like what he did for Alvante Woodard. I was impressed with what Casey Thompson did, despite him not having quite the numbers and quite the production on the stat sheet. I think, you know, while it is one game, it is one scrimmage, it is the spring game, I am not as apprehensive about when Sam Ehlinger goes down next season as I was before this game.
Right, I think that's a smart way to characterize it, but I also think that in addition, it shows that at least at this point, Casey Thompson is the clear number two. For him to get all those plays going deep into the second half when there was mostly, you know, two and three guys going in, and then Rashawn Johnson really only get two passing attempts and a couple rushing attempts, I think that shows a little bit of the disparity, at least at this point, between what's a redshirt freshman who enrolled early last year and a true freshman who is, you know, 15 practices into his career. Tom Herman mentioned that after the game, said, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. His head should be swimming a little bit right now. And, you know, that's why we wanted to get our second guy a little bit more reps, because he is a second guy. He's the guy that right now we're going to trust to go in if something were to happen to Sam. So that situation kind of speaks a little bit to everything. But yes, I think you're right that, like I mentioned earlier in the show, this is why Casey Thompson was so highly rated, lauded coming out of Oklahoma. He set records up there. It's not because he was just a runner. He did have a passing ability, and he definitely was able to show it a few times. You know, put some nice throws. I really do believe he had a few good throws that, you know, for some reason or another didn't fall into his receiver's hands, but they weren't bad decisions, save for maybe the pudgy induced interception by Kobe Boyce.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to be honest, and this might be a hot take here, I thought he showed better passing ability than Sam Ehlinger did out there, aside from one throw that was a missed short throw. And I know it's not hard to do that from the game that Sam Ehlinger did, but still, he showed better passing ability than the starting quarterback, which impressive, but again, spring game against backup cornerbacks and backup safeties. But Joe, before we end off the show, I want to ask you, what is your main takeaway from this game, from the entire spring? If you could take the entire spring and boil it down into one thing, what is that? What is that thought?
There was nothing significant to really stem the development and the progress of the program. I think the biggest thing that could have been said for that might have been the situation that with DeGabriel Floyd, because that's a high quality linebacker in a league that picks apart linebackers that you're not going to get this year that you anticipated seeing a considerable amount of playing time. I think that's the biggest thing that was kind of a downtick for this program. You know, even the injuries to Colin Johnson, Brandon Jones, Caden Stearns, those are guys that you have a pretty good idea of what they're going to provide. So the fact for me that there was really nothing reported, unreported nationally that broke out, you know, no Zach Smith stuff, anything like that. No.
Although he does have a new podcast.
Well, I think ours is better. you know, just having a quiet spring to where there were clear concerns and clear explanations behind those concerns. And a lot of guys who maybe hadn't seen the time that they thought they would have last year have been able to get a little bit more action in roles they thought they would be in at this point. I think that's a positive you have to take away from it, because it, you know, at times no news is good news with how hyper covered, you know, a lot of college sports teams are, and for it to be basically just definitely an unfortunate situation with DeGabriel Floyd having to sit out this season, most like, or almost certainly, but for that to really be kind of the only big, you know,
problem,
concern, boo-boo problem on this spring seems to bode well for a team coming off of, you know, just off a 10-win season.
Yeah, and I think my biggest takeaway is the ability for certain players to take to certain positions, and especially the incoming freshmen like Brew McCoy and Jordan Whittington. Sometimes you bring in a five-star and they're a complete flop. They're overhyped and everything, and you never see them on the field. I don't feel like that's the case for Brew McCoy or Jordan Whittington. I feel like both of those guys were great pickups by the staff. They're both going to be very much used. They're both going to have a lot of production on the field. Those guys, I was impressed with Jeffrey McCulloch's ability to move to another position. The ability for the staff to use and have a bunch of these versatile players that they can stick into positions of need has been shown. And I think this spring is another card in their deck that they can pull out and show, hey, if you're a versatile player, we're going to find a way to get you onto the field and get you playing time. That's what they showed. And it was quite impressive, especially all spring long, to hear certain reports that come out just like what I said. So I think that's going to do it for us. It might be a bit for till our next show because I'm going to be out of the country, but we'll see if we can get something going. We'll see if we can do something. But for now, that's been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or at texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on InsideTexas.com, and you can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
You guys can find both of us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play. Anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.